Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name is John. And how are you doing this week, Steve?
I'm doing just fine. I got my second shot. I'm feeling good.
Oh, right. So no weird side effects? Fever? Cough?
No weird side effects. I did have a very painful shoulder for like 2 days. I couldn't play tennis. Boo-hoo me. But I'm much better now.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. I had my second shot as well. And nothing for me. So 100%.
Got lucky.
Yeah, I saw that funny article. Like, people were complaining that they didn't have side effects because that's when they know they're protected.
Right.
So they said it's the first time they've come out with a vaccine that people complain that they didn't have something.
I want that sore shoulder. You know, I still have a vaccine scar on my shoulder from when I got some, I think a polio vaccine maybe, 1,000 years ago.
In the U.S.?
No, not in the U.S. That's why.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I know someone's not from the U.S. when they have this scar.
Yeah. It's quite common.
I was born and raised, so you know.
There you go. I'm native son.
If you count New Jersey City as America, yeah, kind of. Yeah, for sure. Big changes in the economy, I guess, coming up with the climate change. This is making everything very kind of difficult to predict, kind of difficult to run your business if regulation and all the compliance stuff is not the main thing you want to be focusing on. But there are some companies that help with that sort of thing. And we've seen things like banking as a service, et cetera, and other companies that help you out. And I wonder, how do these companies scale so quickly? And actually, we saw, even with the crypto space, there's support for that on custody and all that sort of thing. But we have people that really know what they're talking about in this space. So this week, actually, we're lucky to have with us the president of ClearEye.ai, Maria George, and the co-founder and chief operating officer of ClearEye, Sharath Shashikumar. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, John. Happy to be here.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, glad you can both be on with us and with the chief operating officer and the president. We can ask you anything. I think you got the whole place covered. Well, first, you guys look like you're a really big help for a lot of companies, not just fintechs. Tell us a little bit about what ClearEye.ai does.
So let me get started and talk to you. Let me take that question and answer what ClearEye is. We started ClearEye. In fact, Sharath and I are co-founders, and we've been working in the banking financial services space, working with Global 1000 Fortune 500 clients for close to 20 years. And both of us were working with a global technology consulting firm prior to this. So a couple of years back, we got together and we were trying to figure out working with the banking landscape, we have learned that many companies try to sell things to the banks, but the banks are trying to do something completely different. And that seems a little too high level, but let me tell you what I mean by that, right? So banking is one of the most regulated industries in the world, and AI is expected to permanently change the way the industry is doing things today, especially now, having accelerated by the COVID-19 pandemic. So now banks are trying to gain competitive edge amongst their peers by leveraging technology. And they want to be more a technology company rather than a financial institution itself. So if you look at that from that point of view, that is the premise in which you're looking at banks. And what banks want to do is also launch products faster to the market, all the way from the front office to the back office, and at the same time, meet their changing customer needs while meeting all the regulatory needs and demands. So in that context, They started working with fintechs a couple of years back, and it's working well in some cases it's not, because fintechs go deep and solve one specific problem in that specific area. They do it very well. But the challenge really is, how many fintechs can each bank work with? They have hundreds of problems to solve. They cannot work with 100 different fintechs. So this is a problem that we saw the banks as our clients facing every single day. And we were thinking, why can't you have a platform? Why can't you have an engine that can be an enabler for a bank and help them deploy products faster to the market while meeting everything else that I talked about earlier, meeting changing customer needs, meeting all the regulatory demands? And that was the premise of ClearEye. And we wanted to build something that will just do that one thing better, help simplify banking and be an enabler for banks. And that's ClearEye.
That is so interesting. You know, Maria, I used to work at a large bank in the Bay Area that had a pretty significant AI team. I think it was like 100 and something people or so,
okay.
Which is the case, I guess, for the larger banks. But so it seems like this product is aimed mostly at the smaller banks, I assume, right? But I guess the question for me is, a lot of what we went through when we're building products that relied on AI was, how do we make it explainable? Mm-hmm. How do we make this pass muster with the regulators? Yes. So because you are touching very delicate parts of the bank, things like know your customer, some AML stuff as well, some third party risk. How do you ensure that you maintain that level of transparency and explainability in the things that you build so that banks have a recourse to say, this is why this happened and how we can fix it if it goes wrong?
Our approach is kind of different. Although we are a platform company, the way we go into the market, the way we approach the banks are with ready-to-go solutions, right? So we do have core engineering breakthroughs which enable, you know, some of these products, right? In the context of data fusion, we have engineering breakthroughs in unstructured data analysis, DSL-based rules processors, anomaly detection, open connects, knowledge graph, then model lifecycle management. So multitude of areas. So all these things put together, it kind of solve these major problems that banks are facing today. At least based on our research, based on what our partners have told us, our customers have told us, none of the players exist out, you know, there who can really, you know, take ClearEye head on when it comes to all these key engineering breakthroughs in one go. So,
yeah, it's interesting because we come across a lot of sort of open banking companies, right, that do things like a lot of API-based services and microservices, but this is really sort of outsourcing, or rather from a bank's perspective, bringing in AI-specific expertise, right? Can you walk us through maybe some of the use cases that you've had in your deployments in the US and some of the results that your clients have seen as well?
So with that, right, a couple of products we have in the market today, one of the products that we launched last year was to do the PPP loan forgiveness and servicing. And I want to highlight that because with CARES Act that was passed last year, PPP was the flavor of for a couple of months early spring last year. And we had a loan servicing engine, which we had built before. We customized that for a PPP servicing and forgiveness engine. Then we were able to launch that product in a matter of a month and a half. And we were able to do it only because of the way we have architected the system and we have built the product. So loan servicing is one of the products we have with the flavor for PPP forgiveness. The second product we have launched in the market and which we are seeing significant traction is on trade finance. So international trade, as you will know, extremely paper heavy. And with the pandemic, you know, the spend on international trade was going through the roof because they could not figure out a way to move documents across. And you know, many of the systems failed because they just simply couldn't get a scan copy into the system. So we have a product that has the ability to read unstructured data. Not only that, it will understand and compare against the international rules like UCP and ISBP rules engine, which is hundreds of thousands of rules. And our custom rule engine can understand and compare against those rules as well as anything that's written in these different variances of the trade documents, whether it's a bill of lading, a letter of credit, invoices, et cetera. So that's the second product we have. The third product we have launched is in the AML space, specifically focused on transaction monitoring and lookbacks. And the focus there is integrating with existing TM systems out there. But at the same time, most of these systems, because they are rule-based, and the false positives in the SAR, suspicious activity reports, are anywhere in the 90 to 95% range. So what we do is integrate with those systems and our algorithms try to whittle down the false positives to a significant number. And the second part of that offering is also looking for any anomalies or false negatives that may have been missed out.
Really interesting there. And in sort of in terms of your target customers, I'm assuming that you're looking at, again, that medium size to that regional bank, right? Or do you also partner with fintechs who maybe want to offer additional products or augment their capabilities as well? What's sort of your target segment here?
Interesting question. So when we first started, we started with the national banks. And that was only because we had, from our past life, we had the relationships because we were working with Fortune 500 clients in the past. We started there. However, then the pandemic hit. There was no way for us to meet anybody. As you know, travel was not an option. And trying to sell something into a new customer when you have not even met anybody was almost impossible. So we pivoted early last year, and we said, we want to change our model. And we partnered with some distribution channels. So this is tier one consulting companies, some of technology companies who are focused on using their financial services to sell more. So they have marketplaces deployed. So we used tier one consulting companies and top technology companies as our distribution partners. And because of that, our market segment, yes, you are right. It's mostly tier two and tier three banks, but there is somewhat tier one presence too, just because of if it's a tier one consultant approaching them and white labeling any of our products, they're more open to that as well.
Have any of them offered to just buy you out and just be the AI capabilities for them?
Not yet.
Not yet, soon.
No. So maybe after the podcast, we'll get a few requests coming our way.
From our millions of listeners, that's right.
Yes. You know, not yet. But since you asked the question, right? So we had a significant seed round 2 years back when we started. So we are good for now, and we are planning a CDC end of this year or early next year, depending on how the pandemic plays out and if we can get in front of investors. So that's our next step. So we've been talking to, and we have, you know, VCs have shown interest. They have reached out to us because of some of the press releases, and they're constantly scouting for fintechs out there. So we've had a request, a couple of VCs, some of the major big ones, reach out to us, and they wanted to know more about it. But we are only looking for maybe towards the end of this year or early next year, but no banks yet.
Oh, so you're only 2 years old. So a lot of your existence has been during the pandemic. Yeah. How has that affected your hiring and operations? It's kind of an awkward time if you are just barely a year old and this hit.
It is, but as Maria mentioned, just like how we kind of pivoted on our distribution side, we didn't face much challenges on hiring side as well. We partnered with some of the top executive search firms. We partnered with some of our ex-colleagues. Hiring was not much of a challenge. Operations, yes, we had to let a lot of our folks work from home, but good news is that we operate everything out of the cloud, unless and until it's customer-specific deployments, which we do on-premise. We were good. There wasn't much of a trouble there.
But it did slow down things, though, yeah. In the sense, deals were slowed down. Things took longer to close and move than it would have taken in a pre-pandemic timeline.
Yeah.
Right. So it was tougher on the sales side than the actual operating day-to-day stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of pandemic, you mentioned earlier that you had also been involved in some of the PPP loan stuff as well, PPP forgiveness.
Yes.
Tell me more about that. That sounds so fascinating. Although it's something that I'm assuming has significantly slowed down or stopped, right? As we're coming out of the COVID economic winter.
Yes. So it started off I think it was April last year, 2020, April, May timeframe. And that was the need of the hour. All the banks, big, large, and small, the first phase was like, hey, all these banks were trying to get as many PPP loans processed as possible. That was phase one. And then they were saying, okay, now I have a problem because I cannot process all this. And then the problem was, okay, now how do I decide what is a PPP loan to be approved? And if I did approve, how much should be forgiven? And now the next phase was, did I number one, give the loan to the right people. Number two, did I, you know, give the right amount of the loan? And if I forgave somebody, did I forgive the right amount? So all these were problems that came up. But the first problem was accepting, you know, accepting the applications from all the borrowers. And where we played was we had a portal that we built that the banks were using. It sat on the lender side, and we integrated with systems that were accepting applications from the borrowers. And that was a conscious decision because banks did not want to change the way their LOS systems, for example, they did not want to change it. And we knew that they're not going to change it. So we said, you continue by getting all the applications from your borrowers, use your existing portals, let them upload everything. And then we were the next phase where we said, once all these applications are in, and when they were sending all those supporting documents, this was interesting, right? In case of PPP, it could have been utility bills. It could have been pay slips, rent and mortgage statements. So the variances there were so high, and you can think about the number of utility companies per state. And most of these small and medium businesses were not using the ADPs of the world for their pay slips. That would have been a handwritten or like a typed in document. So the ability to extract data from all these documents, compare against all the rules that were published by SPA, which was also changing month over month, that was a very interesting challenge. So our system would, again, read through all these documents, scan the images, and then extract the content, compare against the SBA rules, and we'll say, okay, this borrower is eligible for this specific loan. This is the amount he's eligible for based on the people on the payroll or the utility or rents that they have submitted based on proof of submission of documents. So that was the area for us to begin with. Now what is happening is, like you said, that phase is gone. Now it's all look backs and trying to figure out the audit part of it. So there's a lot of interest coming right now to audit the loans that have been approved and the loans that have been forgiven. Again, the same process, but it's a different problem to solve.
That is so interesting. I sort of assumed that a lot of the heavy lift of PPP would be of course done by now, but I hadn't thought of the audit. That makes complete sense as well. And is audit something that your company can also help with, sort of beyond the PPP space?
We don't do the audit part, but we work with, as I mentioned, we have a global partnership with one of the tier one consulting firms. They do the audit, but they use our system to do the audit because they need to go through the documents, compare against the rules, right? So instead of doing a fully manual process, use our system. And we have seen efficiencies up to 65 to 70% because you're automating a lot of manual tasks here.
So you implemented a lot of AI very quickly. What kind of tools or vendors or technologies helped you scale up so quick?
John, primarily we are relying on all open source stack. We really don't license much from any third party providers. We do rely a lot on Microsoft when it comes to cloud infrastructure, some of the, you know, computing resources, some of the OCR components. But anything to do with the models as such, any pre-processing, post-processing, it's all proprietary stuff.
Okay, so you're able to build everything on Azure,
yeah,
and then go from there, and then a lot of the open source sources.
That's correct. Although it's built on Azure because we want to be cloud ready. You know, many of the banks ask for on-prem deployments as well. So since it is containerized, you know, it doesn't have to be on the cloud. Essentially, it can be deployed on-premise in customers' data center as well.
I'm just curious, since Amazon is such a big player, was that just like a comfort you had used Microsoft before and you went with them?
We had a history with Microsoft. We were one of the early adopters of Microsoft for startup program. So we incubated there, then moved on to full-on enterprise-ready scale. So.
And also Microsoft has a program where they incentivize their sales team for Azure consumption. So that works in our favor because our products are deployed in Microsoft Marketplace. And the sales team from Microsoft is incentivized to take our products to Microsoft clients. because because our products are deployed in Azure, the Azure consumption goes higher, and the Microsoft sales team get incentivized for more Azure consumption. So that model worked for us too.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Both
yeah.
sides. They keep yeah. trying yeah. to buy our podcast, but we tell them no. No, thank you. We don't. 10 million is too low.
We have to wait for that sweet Spotify money. On the Amazon note, I know that they've come under fire for essentially creating all these partnerships and then seeing the metrics and then potentially getting into the business themselves. Any concern from your end, given their scale and just the fact that they're Amazon, that they may get into the AI for financial services space?
Not
as well?
Really. At least for now, we do not see that as a threat, because the magic sauce is not the OCR components. For example, Amazon has got Amazon Texas Track, right, on their OCR side. But what really make ClearEye different is the pre-processing and post-processing. Yeah, they may catch up, but at least for next 24 months, looks like ClearEye is safe.
At least for that long, hopefully. Yep.
Yeah, so, and then they can, of course, buy us out. That's okay with us, too.
Yeah, bad break there. Well, we'll have to have a final interview celebration when that happens.
I'm not so very sure it's going to be that easy. They have to compete very hard with Microsoft.
Oh, so. Okay. I like that.
Bidding war. Yeah. It's a tough life. So yes. Just curious, any demand or do you handle already crypto type of products?
No, we don't have it.
Yeah, crypto, no, but we are getting into blockchain space pretty soon, essentially around the trade finance side.
Yeah, right. I've seen that as one of the major use cases, since it's just such a, there's so many intermediaries and steps involved that it's ripe for that kind of simplification, right?
It's still a lot paper-based, right? So but the right. decision has to happen first.
Sure. You're still, even for a fintech, you're still pretty young, so that's okay.
It's in our roadmap, so let me put it that way, right? We will. But so our approach has been trying to solve something, get into as many clients as possible, the land and expand strategy. Right. So it is in our roadmap, but not immediate.
A lot of banks, they don't seem to be worrying about being left behind. A lot of these big banks are so kludgy. Yeah,
but yeah, they're spending millions. I think, like you said, this is hundreds of AI team members. I think it's a matter of time, right? It's gonna happen.
A part of what we also observed in our previous life was many of the AI solutions, the AI showcasing that happens, it doesn't see light beyond the innovation lab, right? So we are great proponents of doing something which can really take to production. Applicable AI, right? You don't really want to say that, hey, yeah, you know, I also do AI. I also have machine learning. I mean, that phase has to go.
Yeah, for sure. It seems definitely underutilized in a lot of spaces.
In terms of the AI adoption, do you think that we'll be in a world where we have have-nots and rather will we have haves and have-nots for banks where, you know, the top banks in the US or in the world will have really good AI and everyone else will either rely on third-party services or just have a more janky AI system?
If you really think about it, right? If you think about the world population, I don't think it's only a very small percentage of the world population that is really doing banking. I mean, I read somewhere that there's of the 8 billion people, 1 billion does not even have a bank account. For those people to start banking, I don't think they're going to the larger banks. They will not be going to the JP Morgan's of the world, they'll go to their community banks. So now, can a community bank bring in AI and technology at that scale? Can they bring in innovation to solve all the problems? I don't think so. And so there is a big gap between the large banks, what they do, and the community banks, what they're doing. And there is a middle ground where the tier two or the regional banks are, who are trying to figure out what to do now. So I think the community banks are going to maybe go with the fintechs and say that I cannot build all this. Let me use the capability from a fintech because I need to serve my customer. The large banks are going to say, I'm going to do it myself. So I think the middle layer, I think that's going to be either disrupted or going to be completely blown away. In the positive side of this is some of the banks in Singapore, for example, we have seen, we're working with some of the banks in Singapore. They're adopting fintechs so much better, yeah. more than the US or even, I think Europe is slightly better. I think interestingly, even though we read about it, that US is, you know, doing all this, when it really comes to, at least from a startup point of view, it was very different in my previous life. From as a startup founder, as somebody from a startup trying to sell to a bank, the experience has been when you go to Asia Pacific, when you go to Singapore, sometimes Europe, they are far ready yeah. to accept startups and try things out than many of the banks in the US.
Oh, interesting. That's typically the opposite of what I hear, but it's
the Silicon Valley story.
Right. Yeah,
is different. Yeah. Well, we always hear good things about Singapore, actually, that they're very forward thinking.
They are.
They know they're technology friendly and they always have incubators and yes. government, you know, support for that. Is Europe that like there's the PSD2, the open banking standardization and regulation, that is that a big help with on the Europe side, do you think?
It is. And another thing I want to, definitely open banking is helpful. But another thing I want to highlight when we say Europe, right? I think if you think about UK, for example, versus the Eastern Europe. And I think it's also because Eastern Europe, for example, we're seeing some real success stories there. We have some real success stories there. And it's because I think they realize that they have to change. They want to digitize. And I think the regulations may be a little bit more lenient there. So they're open to taking a few more chances. So I think that could be the difference between what you're seeing on the Silicon Valley side versus what I just said. Two different scenarios completely.
Yeah, interesting. So what regions is ClearEye available in?
So we started with US. We soon expanded into Eastern Europe. Now we are in India, and we are now trying to expand into Middle East and actually Australia too, because we have a distribution partner set up in Australia now and in Middle East as well.
Sounds like you guys are ready to take over the world. Yeah, good luck with that. It sounds like you guys are doing a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's Maria George, the president of ClearEye.ai and the co-founder and chief operating officer, Sharath Shashikumar. Thank you both for being on and best of luck to you. We'll have to have you on before the IPO.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you, John. Thanks. And Steve, great to be here today. Appreciate your time.
Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.